Her Majesty's prison, Belmarsh, the most secure jail in the country. Built in 1991 to house Britain's most violent criminals. Men like grinder serial killer Stephen Port and murderer and rapist PC Wayne Cousins. But there's another fearsome side to Belmarsh. The untold story of a brutal prison torn apart by gang rivalry.
And someone just walked over someone and cracked him in the face and started punching him. It's only because someone else said, yo, when you see my man, do him.
The gangs coming in and mixing. They see each other on site and they want to stab and kill each other.
Gang members fight to control a destructive trade in drugs.
Belmarsh, it's awash with heroin. You could get a bag of heroin easier than you could get a pillow.
Violence lurks around every corner.
See men fight and go mad and bully each other.
It's a very, very heated place. Everyone's angry.
What does it take to control the gangs?
If you're too soft, they'll walk all over you. It was them versus us.
And just how hard is it to do time in Belmarsh?
And have a tool ready, because when that door opens, it's kill or be killed.
We expose what life's really like inside Belmarsh, on both sides of the bars. Belmarsh Prison in southeast London is infamous for its top-level security. Once in, there's no way out. It's a Category A prison, which keeps Britain safe from our most dangerous murderers, armed robbers, and terrorists. But that's only half of the Belmarsh story. It also takes in offenders from all over London. Many are members of rival criminal gangs involved in vicious turf wars. There are 64 different gangs in the prison. Enemies outside, they're determined to carry on their deadly battles inside. In just 4 months in 2021, there were nearly 40 attacks between gang-affiliated prisoners, making the wings of Belmarsh a very dangerous place for everyone. Bobby Kasanga was part of the notorious Peckham Boys gang. He served time at Belmarsh for multiple armed robberies.
I grew up in Peckham, South London, so initially I was doing what everyone else was doing, was just your street robberies. And then that kind of progressed to bigger sort of crimes. People start carrying guns, some people start selling drugs, and some people go and do bank robberies. And for me, I went and done kind of all of those things.
Most London gangs define themselves by their area or postcode. Police have identified 200 different gangs, with many said to be involved in murders.
Belmarsh had every single person from London, from Brixton to Peckham to Clapham Junction, New Cross, Tottenham, Wood Green. All the gang rivals were all in the same place at the same time, and it was a hot place.
When rivals from different areas meet, violence erupts.
Conflict in prison usually starts over, traditionally, things that may have happened on the outside. So you see someone on the inside and, oh, that's the person I had a fight with outside, that's the person that killed my friend. And sometimes just trivial disrespect. You might be having banter with someone and then someone says something disrespectful and you can't take it.
Former drug baron Andrew Pritchard was found with £1 million worth of cocaine in his car. He was sentenced to 15 years. Two of those were spent in Belmarsh.
I was arrested in East London and I was charged with possession with intent to supply Class A drugs.
Whilst in Belmarsh, as a Cat A prisoner, he regularly witnessed gang warfare that shocked him.
As soon as they see another Coast Guard gang member, they'd attack each other. There's incidents where they'll kidnap them in a cell, they'll take a lighter, start burning their feet, they'll get them to get on the phone and, you know, try to transfer money into their accounts. The rule I always had in my mind was this: when that door opens, anything could come through it. So have a tool ready, because when that door opens, it's kill or be killed.
I remember my first week in Belmarsh in the gym. I think we just finished football and someone just walked over someone and cracked him in the face and started punching him. He didn't have an issue with that person at all. It's only because someone else said, yo, when you see my man, do him. So he took the instruction of someone else and went and done that. And you kind of gobsmacked, you're thinking, whoa, what's going on there? I had issues with different people within different prisons. So, you know, going there, you might meet the wrong person. They might be putting you in a wing where all your ops are your rival gang members. If they put you in that wing, you're done for.
New arrivals are keen to build up their turf inside.
Got a lot of these gangs now. Whereas before, they might have thought twice because the cameras are on them. They don't give a shit. They'll stab another gang leader or another gang member. And if they get caught on camera, they don't care. So it's a lack of care whether they get caught or not. Because if they've got that job to do for their gang, they've got to do it. Because otherwise they've got to get done.
And you take that kind of mentality and you put it in a confined environment like Belmarsh, obviously these prisoners are very likely to bump into each other on a regular basis. They might not mind getting arrested or getting caught or even having their prison sentence lengthened if they get caught committing violence, because to them it's more important to be somebody in prison than to be nobody on the outside.
With gang violence a regular occurrence, how do you contain such a toxic mix of violent young men? Former prison officer Paul Whiteman was on the front line whilst working in Belmarsh in 2021.
And there's a lot of gang culture in there now with the kids with the postcode wars. They need to keep it apart, like this person from this gang can't mix from this person from that gang, because if they meet each other, they will fight on sight. I don't know the gangs they can and can't mix with. They just want to fight each other just because they live in a different postcode. It is quite ridiculous for me to see.
Kevin Felton worked in a special security unit whose job was to keep the gangs apart.
A prison officer's got to be fair. In the vast majority of prisoners, if you're fair with them, they're fair with you. There was a lot of thought going in on where to put people because of the gang culture. And you never know what's going to happen. You know what's going on, but you can't really do anything. And you can only stop sort of physical contact at that point in time.
A savage attack by a gang could leave life-threatening injuries.
On certain house blocks, maybe 80% of people are in for murder, gang-related murders. I was in the cell, and across to where we were, another guy was just sitting, you know, having his dinner. The guy just walked down the stairs very casually. In his hand, he had a tuna lid. If you take a nail clipper, you can use it to actually open the tin of tuna. But also what it does is it creates a jagged edge around the lid. He literally walked over to the cell where the guy was eating, and he started from here, he bedded it into his head, took it down through his forehead where the bone was open, went through his eye, split that open, came down across his cheek, down across his mouth, and stopped there. Casual as a day, just walked out, up the stairs, trail of blood coming down. And just went back to himself.
Sometimes you get the younger, hungrier members of a gang who want to make a name for themselves, and they want their status to rise within that gang. So they're willing to commit violence, they're willing to follow the instructions of the senior gang members just so that they have protection and they can advance themselves within the gang.
Belmarsh Category A prison in southeast London. Its notorious high security unit has 47 cells housing the country's most dangerous criminals. From Manchester arena killer Hashem Abedi to rapist and murderer PC Wayne Cousins. But another 1,500 inmates pass through its gates each year. They range from armed robbers and murderers to drug dealers. While the highest risk inmates are brought into prison separately, everyone else must face the melting pot of reception. It's an experience even the toughest never forget.
When you get into Belmarsh, obviously the whole strip search thing, take away most of your items, and then you get put into this sort of plastic clear box, and there's other boxes next to it as well with different people. The rival from a different gang can also end up in that same spot at the same time, and then literally, if you guys got real life beef, it gets cracking.
Daniel Marcheski, a former drug addict, has served many short sentences in Belmarsh.
At a young age, I started using drugs. By the time I was 21, I was full-blown crack cocaine heroin addict and in and out of prison. The security vans coming from so many different locations. It's inevitable that in those holding cells, there will be people there that are beefing with each other. I don't know whether it was ever possible for the prison officers to police that properly. It's a very, very difficult situation. You're going to get people in those holding cells that are against each other. It was awful. It was an awful experience.
Peter McDonough was wrongly imprisoned for attempted murder and spent a year in Belmarsh before being acquitted.
When I went to court, I thought I was going to get bail at the Old Bailey and to be told that I was going to go to Belmarsh High Security Prison.
He remembers the tension in Belmarsh's holding cell, nicknamed The Cage.
It's like a fire alarm's just gone off. Everybody's running this way, that way. You've got so many different criminals in there, drug addicts, murderers, car thieves, robbers, and all from different sort of walks of life. And it's mayhem. This place is a confined space. You know, it's emotions running high. People's left their wives outside. People have got problems at home. It's a very, very heated place, and everyone's angry. I was a boxer, so I was only small. Someone just got a little bit cheeky to me, and I thought, listen, I've got to stamp my authority straight away. My natural thing is attack if someone, puts it on you, but let them come at you first. So he come at me first and bang, put him in his place. Kicked off in there. Before you know it, it was broken up and the screws broke us apart and stamped the authority from then on.
It's not just violent offenders who have to encounter the cage. Ex-cabinet minister Jonathan Aitken was sent to Belmarsh for perjury.
The scene in that cage was like the sort of Wild West gone wrong. I remember one gang all bashing up some young man, shouting at him, "You got the script wrong, you got the script wrong, that's why we're all in effing here," that sort of stuff. Very strong-looking guys just simply burying their heads in their hands and weeping. I remember one young man who was sort of so wild at the sentence he'd received that he just kept charging in the bars until he head split open.
Once inmates are booked into Belmarsh, they're moved to a temporary cell to be assessed in the induction block known as Beirut.
The reason it's called Beirut is because it was a war zone. The screws nicknamed it Beirut. And it's like a monkey house in the zoo. The noise is incredible. You know, people shouting from the landings, music blaring, because they're not in the prison proper now. So you've got nutters running around in there, cutting themselves. You've got people screaming into the middle of the night because they haven't been sectioned yet.
I worked on house block 3, which is the reception house block. We'd also take a lot of the prisoners from around the prison that were hard to handle. So it was quite a wild place.
As you walk down the corridors, everyone's eyeing each other up, looking at each other, thinking, what's he all about? What's he in here for? Beirut was like... it was like being at a football ground. Let's call it Millwall. A crowd cheering, going mad.
When you are surrounded by, very often, intimidating characters, big built, powerfully built men who inhabit a very closely confined space, with policed by a small number of prison officers. And when you get prisoners entering it for the first time, you've entered into an environment where you are going to feel tremendously, tremendously vulnerable.
When inmates have been assessed in Beirut, a process that can take weeks or even months, they're moved into a permanent wing. Prisoners are spread across four house blocks, each with four spurs, housing up to 180 individuals. Being moved to your new home brings a whole new fear. Who are you going to be banged up with? Mixing older prisoners with fresh off the street youngsters is always going to create problems.
A lot of those young people, that young mentality who are still kind of heated, are now being put into a place. And a lot, if you speak to a lot of the elder people, they can't stand the young people. They're like, we just want to have a calm environment. The young people bring all the heat because of all the fights they're bringing. The last thing you want is kids in there fighting, causing more officers to come to your wing and then searching up the place, so it's crazy.
You've got gangs, you've got, you know, people in for fraud, white-collar crimes, blue-collar crimes. The demographic of it goes from non-payment of TV licence to, you know, someone who's been in and out of prison for the last 20 years of his life, an armed robber, violent criminals, all sorts, drug abusers. You know, it's wide-ranging.
Unless prisoners have good reason to be separated, the allocation of cells is Russian roulette.
Matey boy, who's the biggest in the cell, he might want to play his jungle garage music till 3 a.m. Well, what are you going to do about it? Nothing. Because he's the top man in the cell.
I remember one incident, a guy had just come in. He was outside the cell, shaking and sweating. And he was like, I can't believe I'm sharing a cell with this guy. He doesn't seem right. So I asked someone, they said he'd actually chopped off someone's head and stuck a post-it note on it. The young guy that was sharing a cell with him hadn't slept a whole night, because he was frightened to fall asleep just in case he would get the same fate.
If it's not a maniacal murderer or a gang member with violence on his mind, it could be a drug user with a dangerous addiction.
They put me in a three-man bang-up. All of a sudden, someone started smoking heroin and buzzed on the door. I said, look, get me out of here, because I said, I'll end up killing him. I said, I'm not about that business. And they put me in a single cell. I used to just say, bang that door as hard as you can. You know, they're all crazy outside. I just want to make sure I'm safe in here. Make sure you lock it. See you in the morning, Gov.
I would always hope that I got put in a cell with another addict, because the stuff that I would experience in, you know, in prison, it was not pleasant at all. It would always be better for me to be in a cell with someone that is going through the same kind of detox that I was.
When Daniel Marcheski was banged up with an inmate who had serious mental health issues, it turned into a nightmare.
As I was chatting to my cellmate throughout the evening, he started to, well, lose his capacity to hold a grounded conversation, to say the least. Over the stages of time, I realised the man's not well. Seriously not well. It's clear that he's having some sort of episode. About half an hour went on and he defecated on himself, lost his mind in front of me, and started hallucinating quite severely. This poor man became completely overwhelmed with fear. Fear of everything. Fear of any noise, fear of me, fear of what he thought was jumping through the window at him. Not a nice situation to be in. You're watching the clock, thinking, please get this man out of my cell, or get me out of the cell.
Mental health issues are a massive challenge in Belmarsh. Up to 240 prisoners a month are referred for mental health assessment.
So my mental health deteriorated. I was losing my sanity. I was started to neglect my physical health. Did actually try to take my life and obviously hang myself off the end of a bed. And I had a guv just look through the door at me and just watch me do it. But obviously I'm still here, but yeah, it was crazy, and that was traumatic for me.
We don't physically become broken, do we? Mental side of it, it's a big, big side of it. And I don't think they've got the support in the jails. You know, we find a lot of people that commit suicide or harm themselves in jail are people that have been nicked for drink driving two or three times and they just can't handle prison. It's not people that are doing 20 years.
From inmates with mental health problems to violent criminals and even white-collar prisoners, the population of Belmarsh is a mixed bag. For ex-cabinet minister Jonathan Aitken, imprisonment meant entering a world completely outside his experience.
The prisoners of Belmarsh had been well informed about my arrival in the jail, and suddenly by my left and right cell neighbours set up a sort of, at first quite a gentle Afro-Caribbean chant. Suddenly it spread to other wings and across the exercise yards to other house blocks, and the whole darn jail seemed to be joining in this very aggressive chant about, tomorrow morning, lads, let's show him what we can do to Tory cabinet ministers and their testicles or something like that.
I'd seen him on the television news the night before. We'd all watched it in his Savile Row suit and his, his handmade shirt and brogues and that. He was a posh boy. That was a black mark against him straight away. He was a Tory. That was another black mark against him. He was good friends with the then Home Secretary Michael Howard, who was making it hard for prisoners at that time and was absolutely hated at every prison. So people were determined he was going to get some comeuppance.
I discovered quite early on that the sort of Mr. Big of the Beirut wing was somebody called Razor.
As he came onto the landing, I walked up to him, stuck my hand out, and went, Razor Smith. At that time, I was like 19 stone, you can imagine, all my tattoos up my arms and everything.
He said, I hope you're not a friend of that effing something or other, Mickey Howard. And I was tempted, I can't stand Michael Howard. I hardly know him. But I was in jail for perjury and I was trying to reform. So I thought I'd better not tell another big porky here. So I said something like, well, I'm very sorry, but personally, Michael Howard's actually rather a friend of mine. He's a good guy. And this did not go down well with Razor Smith, who growled ferociously and says,
there he is talking to this 19 stone tattooed, bald-headed thug of a prisoner in this prison wing where he's never been before in his life, surrounded by people who go, I kid, and all that. You know what I mean? Giving it all, you mug. And he was so loyal to his mate, and so there was no guile in him.
Well, he says, at least you're effing loyal, and that'll do you some good in this place. I, from that moment onwards, sort of knew that this was a guy I could probably get along with.
Alongside its role as a high-security Category A prison, Belmarsh also houses a wide cross-section of criminals from all over London. As prisoners settle in, they discover that the prison is like a village. It's a close-knit community where black market trading is a way of life.
Wherever there's a curfew, okay, or prohibition, there's always opportunities for people to make money on different scales.
All new inmates are given a TV, kettle, and bedding for their cell. Prisoners have a small weekly allowance to buy snacks from the canteen. But sought-after foods form the basis of an underground economy.
It's a packet of biscuits to get your washing sort of lifted ahead of the queue a little bit. Two tins of tuna for a haircut, because obviously in haircut in prison is a big thing. And you have various trades. So the currency of tins of tuna, that's gold standard currency. Imagine tuna being gold, biscuits being silver.
It's serious, mate. You want a game of pool and you play for a packet of Jammy Dodgers. If you don't give me them Jammy Dodgers, it's going to go off. There's going to be murders.
Cells become pawn shops where things are traded and gambled. The most business savvy of inmates quickly branch out into more lucrative income sources.
We had the blackjack table, 21. Which was, I guess, the most lucrative, because everybody would come. I'll give them a limit, so they can only gamble up to £50. They have to put that money into my account. Once that money's in my account, then you get more chips. So with that, I was able to then go and start buying canteen. So I had sardines, tunas, cookies, whatever it is.
The swapping around of canteen and you know, owing each other this and that, that's always going to happen. If it's not causing any trouble, if it's all innocent and they're just swapping about, yeah, that's fine.
The trouble is, it's not always innocent. If debts aren't paid, things quickly turn nasty.
It might be trainers, it might be T-shirts, it might be drugs, it might be weapons, but it will also be the economy that surrounds those things. It's an unwritten rule of prison that if you borrow something, the value of that increases doubled a week. It's a system known as double bubble. So if you borrow £10 from me, it's £20 next week. It's £40 the week after. It's 80 quid after that.
You see people get into all sorts of troubles because of debts, and a lot of times, because they know they're in trouble, they'll let the officers know and they try to move to a different wing. But then word will get on, oh, that guy's run off with a debt on that wing, it's your debt now, take it and just give me half. Wherever you kind of go, people kind of find you. But you see people get beaten up, you see people get cut because of debts.
The underground economy becomes darker and far more profitable when banned products come into play. In Belmarsh, two things are valued above all else: drugs and phones.
A phone in Belmarsh would have gone for like £1,000. £1,000 for a phone.
A mobile phone that trades hands on the outside for just a few pounds, 10 times the value when you transport it into prison custody.
With big profits to be made, prisoners go to extraordinary lengths to smuggle in banned goods.
I mean, there's obviously the way of the anal passage that's quite popular.
There was a few guys on the wing that eventually got hold of those little tiny mobile phones, and they would secrete them prior to getting their sentence and get them on the wing like that.
The only business bigger than phones is drugs.
Drugs in a jail are probably worth three times what they are on the streets outside. It's a lucrative business. We were convinced that prisoners actually came in to deal drugs in jails because it was worth it.
Michael Lotham was in and out of Belmarsh on a number of occasions.
As soon as I came on the wing, it'd be like, yeah, mix, yeah. And they know that nine times out of 10, I'd either be holding or sorting out ways to get something. I was using as well as, like, dealing.
It's worth inmates spending time thinking up clever ways to get around security.
You're there for 8 hours a day, they're there for 24 hours a day. So they've got three times the amount of time to think up different schemes to do things than what we have.
Bogus solicitors coming in, bringing goodness knows what. Visitors putting drugs in nappies in babies, in clothes in toddlers, or drugs on the end of a bit of cotton or fishing wire so that they swallow and then they can bring them back up.
You might have a hole cut into your jogging bottoms or whatever, sitting on a chair, as in how I'm sitting on it now, come to the edge of the chair, like that. Once they've got it in their hands, they just proceed to put it away like this, and it's inside you. Like, as a prisoner, we call it bottling.
In 2018, Belmarsh installed a full body scanner known as the Boss Chair. It's a highly sensitive metal detector which scans new arrivals for anything hidden inside their body.
It's sort of look basically like an electric chair. If you weren't told this chair, you know, it's going to search your body, you thought that your sentence was about to expire on the spot there and then.
Smuggling drugs can lead to a spell in solitary confinement and even a bigger sentence. But a greater risk is falling out with other inmates over deals gone wrong.
I knew people that were in gangs. A lot of them were actually in prison
for the sale of Class A drugs. There will always be guys on the wing that are competing for hierarchy in the sale of contraband and drugs. Always, if you had drugs or a mobile phone, you'd secrete them. You'd be very silly to think that they were safe in any part of the cell.
If you do have it, you better be able to protect yourself, because if you can't protect yourself, someone's coming for that. You'll be in a cell, three or four people are in your cell now, and they'll be like, yo, hand it over. Hand over what kind of thing? And then obviously people do things that put things up their bum and stuff like that, and literally people say, it's in your bum, shit it out.
In Belmarsh, fighting over drugs can lead to frightening acts of aggression.
There were a number of ways that violence would take place on the wing. One of those ways was the sugar water, or what is known as getting jugged. Someone would fill up a jug full of boiling hot water, chuck loads of sugar in it and just chuck it on a bloke's face. And that was one of the worst things that could happen to you.
It strips the skin because the sugar clings to your skin and turns to treacle. I've seen it done many times.
Michael Lothan has a permanent reminder of being jugged after a deal went wrong.
He asked me for, let's just say, 3 bags of heroin, and I would get back double of what I give him. So I sorted him out. And then after the visit time, I'm waiting for him to come back to me, and he didn't appear. So I went to his cell. I lost my temper. I ended up punching him up. I said to him, when you came to me, I gave it to you. I never made you wait. Go and sort it out. And he left. I was sitting down and I see his head pop round the door. He had a big jug and he just launched it at me. I could see like the bubbles coming on my skin and that. The pain, I was just on fire. I felt the shirt that I had on tearing into me, and I took my top off, and when I looked in the mirror, I was white. See for yourself. For months, I couldn't sleep lying down. It will never go away. I'm very lucky that it came back like this.
Despite the dangers, the drug trade in Belmarsh continues, with plenty of desperate customers. Drug use amongst male prisoners countrywide is at an all-time high. The number of offenders becoming addicted whilst in custody has more than doubled in the past 5 years.
A lot of people get the habit for drugs in prison. In prisons like Belmarsh, it's awash with heroin. If you want to become a heroin addict in Belmarsh, you can. You could get a bag of heroin easier than you could get a pillow.
On the wings, there's a melting pot of addicts. Of course, you know, drugs in order to escape. Literally, if you can't break through the walls, you can escape in another way. See men fight and go mad and bully each other. Went from heroin to any drug, and then spice came in, and that was just the rage.
Spice is a popular drug on the Belmarsh house blocks. It's a cocktail of chemicals mixed with plant material and is sometimes misleadingly called synthetic cannabis.
Spice is very popular in prisons because it's very easy to smuggle in. There's actually been many cases of children's drawings that have been coated with spice. And then once the spice comes into the prison, they can tear it up and smoke it.
Spice is very addictive. You've got people who maybe never even smoked weed and are going straight into smoking spice. I've seen people literally like zombies looking crazy, and you think to yourself, like, what the hell? And they're just literally in their cell, and you talk to them, and they're not even responding.
Inmates high on spice are often physically abused by other prisoners.
I saw things become quite awful. I did use spice on a couple of occasions. I just tried it and thought, that's not for me at all. I do not want to be in prison feeling that feeling.
Spice is an absolute disgusting drug. You know, what chance have the kids got? What chance have the youngsters got within prison in Belmarsh?
Her Majesty's Prison, Belmarsh, a Category A prison, housing everyone from terrorists to murderers and gang members to petty thieves. By mixing career criminals with first-timers, Belmarsh almost inevitably runs a risk of becoming a school of crime.
Gone are the days when convicted prisoners weren't allowed to mix with unconvicted prisoners. You do have to manage it carefully, because the last thing you want is for some first-time prisoner to come in and go out a career criminal.
You know, there's an old story that you go in for robbing a car and you come out being able to be a safe breaker, because you learn all this inside. It's a downside of mixing all these different people.
People that go to prison, they're all tarred with the same brush, but there's so many different crimes what people are away for. So it's very, very hard to congeal all them people together and to get a positive response when they leave the jail. Because some people go in there for little crimes, end up coming out and just going backwards and forwards again. And, you know, you've got people that go in there for 6 months and end up doing it for the rest of their life.
Today's Category C is tomorrow's Cat A. They're on their way up in the crime world, and they're making names for themselves.
Along with learning the tricks of the trade, low-ranking and vulnerable inmates are easily exploited by hardened gang members.
The picture of how gangs will threaten and use other prisoners is more complex than sometimes we recognise. They'll get prisoners who are vulnerable, who are regarded as the lowest on the social hierarchy. And when they smuggle new psychoactive substances in, they'll test them on those prisoners. They'll give them to them to see what the effect is, how strong the dose is. And very often, that sees prisoners overdosing.
So you will get a lot of these gangs congregating in cells. But the rule was, any more than sort of two or three in a cell, then you hoist them out. You don't let sort of, you know, four or five, six in a cell, because they're obviously up to no good. A lot of it is a bit of congregating, you know, younger inmates will be manipulated, so you just keep an eye on them for their safety.
Nicknamed Hellmarsh, Belmarsh is a tough prison that holds equally tough inmates. So how do the prison officers stop the hardest men controlling the weaker prisoners?
If they start dominating the wing, and then once they dominate the wing, they try and dominate us, that's when it can't happen. That's when it can't happen, or you lose control. You can't let them have control. You've got to control it for the safety of other inmates as well, not just the officers. It's not about just about us. We've got a legal right to look after the rest of the inmate population.
Keeping order is priority number one. And with staff numbers cut by nearly 30% in recent years, there's little time to prepare prisoners for release and what might hopefully be a fresh start.
Someone said to me, well, why don't you do more rehabilitation work and sit down with them and discuss things? I said, I'm not being insulting or anything. I said, by the time I left the prison service, we had just about enough time to unlock them because we were that understaffed. We had just about enough time to give them exercise. Put and sit down and discuss how to rehabilitate them. Every year it was do more for less.
Lack of education, lack of work, homelessness, drugs, all combined just lead to crime. And until you sort of tackle all of those, you're going to forever be having the one that says he's never coming back in again.
With almost 60% of prisoners returning within a year, can rehabilitation ever be a realistic aim for Belmarsh?
you've got a churn of very unpredictable short-term, short-sentence prisoners, knowing that they're not going to be held there for very long, and then they're going to be out again to reoffend and be back through the door again. Whether the right place for them is a prison like Belmarsh is a very, very good question. But I think what we can say is that there's very little that's going to go on in Belmarsh that's going to address the causes of their offending behaviour in the first place.
I think if you educate people, it might rehabilitate people. You know, you're not rehabilitating people by leaving them in a cell and they're smoking heroin. That's that, you know, what is that rehabilitating? You know, they do education in there, but what sort of education, I don't know. Give them people skills, give them life skills. That's what they need.
But despite all the pressures inside and outside of Belmarsh, some men defy the odds and turn their backs on crime.
It's so funny because every time I go past these security vans, I look at them and I think to myself, like, what the hell possessed you? This is actually crazy. When you think about it, what you'd done there was crazy, but as a young man, you think with greed.
The nature of my addiction led me to serve many short sentences. It was like a revolving door for me, you know, crime, drugs, jail, crime, drugs, jail. And when I was in Belmarsh prison, and frankly, outside of Belmarsh prison as well, the thought and the hope of finding a rehab was like a sort of, it was almost like an urban myth. I wasn't able to find that until I was met by people that understood exactly where I was at and that could empathise with me.
If you want behavioural discipline and you want to be a changed person, then jail can be that for some people. The way that I was in prison and the things that I went in for, to the man that I've got out to and the man that I am today, I'm proud of where I've come from. Like, I've come from rock bottom and now the only way is up. So, and I've got a job, I'm settled down, I've got a fiance, I've been successful, my family love me, I'm the man that I am today. So I work for my money. It's changed my whole life, obviously. I'm a different person to this day and it's just made me so happy.